once again to Wayward Children, the podcast of Jewish mysticism, magic, monsters, and dare I say it, mayhem.
I am
the crunch of leaves coming from beyond the tree line when you think you're alone in the forest, John Baltusberger.
And I am Jack Zients, the tusk of a narwhal wedged hard into bleached wood. You're guys, buzzing. I had to work really hard for that one, man. Come on, give me some credit here. John was speechless. I take that as a compliment.
I was, because, well, here's what was happening. I was thinking about narwhals. and a really good way to render me speechless is to bring up animals, because I will then spend the like next 20 to 30 minutes just like, man, animals are cool.
Narwhals are awesome. Narwhals
are very cool.
By any standard.
They are. They're the Wolverine of the sea, if you think about it.
Totally. I love that image.
Why are we talking about narwhals and the sound of crunching leaves? We're talking about these things because we have been asked by friend of the show, Marty, to discuss a pretty big monster? Critter?
Creature? Varmint? Varmint. Let's go with varmint.
I like varmint. And how they, what they are in Jewish myth, right?
Right.
Of course, I am talking about the mighty Sphinx. No, I'm talking about unicorns. Unicorns today.
We're talking about unicorns, and I just want to jump in and say, like unicorns are on nobody's list of Jewish critters, right?
None. They weren't on mine.
Right, and so this is one of the things that makes the whole topic crazy, is that Jewish legends and lore are filled with unicorns, but they're usually hidden. In a lot of cases, they're hidden. They're more obscure. That just makes them more cool. So I got to tell you a fast story, John. I've taught a number of like teen and adult classes here in my hometown. Well, my adopted hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan. And one of my absolute favorite moments teaching involved unicorns. And I'm telling you this because it kind of meant a lot to me. But if anybody out there is listening to this and saying, boy, maybe should we teach a class like this? And you're sending, I guess you absolutely should. So I was teaching this middle school class. We talked about Golem. We talked about unicorns. We talked about estuaries and Shadim. But it was like when we hit the unicorn, it was like the third day of like the 6-day class. And I'm like, okay, we're going to talk about unicorns today. And there was this boy named Daniel who was just pre-bar mitzvah. And this is important. I'll come back to this in a second. Who just looked up at me and said, wait, we have unicorns? And he said, nobody told me we had unicorns. Like, he felt so cheated that he had gotten to be 12 years old and didn't know that unicorns, there were Jewish unicorns, the Jewish unicorns right. Thing. And so the reason why I say it's important about his just pre-bar mitzvah was I went to his bar mitzvah. It was about three months later. I was there on Saturday morning and it was his bar mitzvah. And as I'm there, I'm talking with his dad, who is the proud dad. You know, my son's getting his bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. And I introduced myself and he's like, wait, Jack, you're the teacher. You're the teacher who taught that class. And I'm like, oh yeah. No, I was Daniel's. Like I was taught Daniel's class. And he's like, I got to tell you, man, in his entire history of going to Hebrew school, of going to religious school, there is only one time he's ever come running out of the synagogue and had to tell me everything he learned in Hebrew school that day. Exactly once. You guys know where this is going, mm-hmm. right? It was the day that we talked about unicorns, and I think we talked about Estri that day as well. So I think it was that day. But he is like, he told me your entire, he went through the entire class right there. And I'm like, you know, this is what it's like. We have cheated our kids by not telling them about Jewish unicorns. So thank you to Marty. We are going to fix that tonight.
So I want to tell you, Jack,
yeah,
I have also taught a middle school class. I got invited to speak to a middle school about being a writer and writing novels, because it was a middle school like advanced writing class, and
cool.
That was super cool, and they invited me, and I'm there, I'm talking about writing and about the process and all this, and one kid finally goes, Mr. B, can we hear something you've written?
Oh dear.
Absolutely not.
We're gonna give this class rated G. I don't think you've ever written anything rated G ever.
I prefer to remain outside of prison. I do not need your parents coming for me. I mean, I could write a unicorn story.
You could.
It would still not be appropriate, because that's just not the kind of writer I am, baby.
I'm willing to bet if we took one of your, well, some of your books, we could probably find individual sentences that would fly. But that, I can think of a couple of your books where I don't think you could even find individual sentences that would work.
I just released a book called Unclean Verses.
Yeah,
and
no. I don't think you can get past the title.
My mother, my blessed mother, called me and was like, John, I saw the blurbs that people wrote for your book. Yeah, the blurbs were too scary for me.
Yeah.
And I got another. I got a review from Edward Lee, the godfather of extreme horror. And I'm not going to repeat what he said, but I was like, Ed, I can't use this blurb.
No one but you might think this is a good thing. But you know.
Okay, so
All right. Now
it is your turn to teach me. Pretend that I am a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 11-year-old. Getting ready for my bar mitzvah, and just tell me all about these magical unicorns.
Let's do it. And I, like any good teacher, I'm going to start with a question, because let's start. John, when I say the word unicorn, what are you thinking about? Like, what do you think a unicorn? We haven't gotten to Jewish unicorns, but like, talk to me about unicorns. What do you think a unicorn is?
Okay, so the first book I remember, I had a book as a kid about an alchemist, and he needed a unicorn horn to create a decanter in order to turn lead to gold. That's a whole alchemy thing.
Yeah.
And it was very typical of, like, he had to team up with a pure maiden. And the unicorn would lay its head in the maiden's lap, and he would be able to get the horn. And throughout all the entire book, it shows this wizard, almost like Wile E. Coyote, chasing the Roadrunner, trying to get this horn, and all the mishaps. And at the end of the book, the maiden just gives him a horn. And he's like, well, how'd you get it? How'd you do it? It's like, oh, they shed them during rutting season.
So that's awesome. And may I point out that you hit one of the main legends about the unicorn, which we'll get to in a second, but you skipped right over one of the key things about the unicorn. What does a unicorn look like?
Oh, great goatee. Wears a big top hat and those little round. I'm thinking of Sting.
Yeah, no, that's definitely not a unicorn.
That's different. That's wait, not Sting. Or Slash. Mr. Peanut. I'm thinking of Slash.
I thought you were describing Mr. Peanut, but that's all right.
There are a lot of ways that Mr. Peanut and unicorns are alike.
I see
Probably. I
that.
don't.
How about a little bit more of how would you pick one out of a police lineup?
All right. So a unicorn is a horse with a
Okay.
single, a uni horn.
Right. So this is the class when somebody says in a Western culture, we talk about a unicorn, the immediate thing that people imagine is a horse with a horn, often a white horse, because there's this sensibility about purity that goes along with it. And you described the idea perfectly with this whole legend about the unicorn putting its head in the lap, being attracted to innocence, and putting the head in the lap of the innocent young usually young girl. Okay, so let's put all that on hold. That is a medieval Christian description of a unicorn. It's one that's permeated Western culture. Totally great set of stories. If we were medieval Christians, we would be immediately associating the unicorn with Christ and the horn with the cross and the girl with Mary. There's this whole set of symbolism that goes into that, most of which that symbolism is completely opaque to the modern pop culture, which just kind of takes the surface of it. But good. So we're on the same page. And let me just start by saying, Jewish unicorns are so much more badass than that. It's awesome. Jewish unicorns have nothing to do whatsoever with purity and innocence. They're just sheer badass, right? The entire
Bad.
point of unicorns in Jewish lore, the way they show up in Jewish lore, is they represent strength and agility. They are badass. They are not this, oh, like I'm gonna follow some innocent thing around and come after my, like, no, none of that. Like, it's a very different idea. There's also another thing that's different, or at least arguable, in Jewish unicorns. Are they horses? Right? This is like a big deal, right? The whole modern idea of a unicorn is it a horse. And the thing with the Jewish unicorns is they became horses. Like, there's a lot of
Okay.
Jewish legends, kind of medieval, and they're actually going back even earlier than medieval. I'm not quite sure where in the lore they started to be thought of as horses, but they did. But that's not how they started. The early
Okay.
descriptions of them actually were descriptions of bulls, of more of a like kind of a mighty bull with a single horn, versus a horse with a single horn. And then that transmuted over time. And let me give you an example, or we'll get to in a second. Like, I'm going to tell you like one of the an early Midrash about unicorns where it couldn't possibly be a horse. And you'll see what I mean. But the thing I want to kind of get to before that is I want to point out that there are three different words or phrases used in Hebrew for a unicorn. In the Talmud, in the Midrash, there's three different kinds of unicorns, or at least three different perspectives on unicorns. So it's not just a single thing. There's three different ways they're referred to. One of them is Re'im, the other is Tachash, and the third is Keresh. Okay, and these are three different things. As what do we always say in the show, right? Like, Jews are great at commentary and we're terrible at taxonomy. Why have one unicorn? You can have three unicorns, right? So we're going to talk about, what I wanted to do is talk about each one of those and kind of lay them out. And then we can talk about how they show up in a bunch of cool Jewish lore.
Okay.
Sound good? All right, so let's jump into Re'im. And Re'im is the kind of quintessential Jewish unicorn. And it's, like I said, it's a bull. And here is like one of the classic Midrash about Re'im. So it's a Midrash on Adam. This specifically comes from the Talmud, from Avodah Zarah, which is one of the tractates. And the basic idea of it, actually, I'll just read it. Let me just read the Talmud, because hey, we're a Jewish podcast, and where would we be if we're not reading Talmud all the time?
That's true.
So this, like I said, this is Avodah Zarah 8a, and it says, the sages taught on the day that Adam, the first man, was created, when the sun set upon him, he said, woe is me, because I sinned. The world is becoming dark around me, and the world will return to chaos and disorder. So quick sidebar, right? Like, what's going on here? It's getting dark. Adam's never seen it get dark. So clearly, like, there's some moral thing that's happening here. He must have done something to make it get dark. And he's kind of scared that it's never going to get light again. And that would kind of suck. Right? Mm-hmm. And this is the death that was sentenced upon me from heaven. He spent all night fasting and crying. I always loved that bit. He fasted all night. So do I. I don't get any credit for it. I go to bed, I get up in the morning, right? I mean, like, I don't get any credit for that.
We call that intermittent fasting now.
That's right. That's right. So he spent all night fasting and crying, and Eve was crying opposite him. Once dawn broke, he said, evidently the sun sets and night arrives, and this is the order of the world. Cool. Okay. Good teaching moment. He arose and sacrificed a Re'im whose horns preceded his hooves in the order they were created. And it goes on to kind of make this reference to Psalms. And Rabbi Yehuda says that Shmuel says, the bull that Adam, the first man, sacrificed had one horn in his forehead, as it is stated, and it shall please the Lord better that the bullock has a horn and hooves. And it kind of goes on with this like very technical grammatic argument thing, because if you ever read Talmud, every story is wrapped around a bunch of halachic discussion. So, yeah. But I find that, first of all, I find the story awesome, right? Like,
it reminds me of Animal Farm.
Yeah. I mean,
if you're not familiar, there's a scene in Animal Farm after the pigs have taken over the farmhouse, where all of the pigs and dogs get drunk. And the next morning, they like kick open the door and make the big announcement that they've all been poisoned and are dying because they're hungover.
Right, exactly.
And that's what it reminds me of. Oh, this is the end. The end of Adam.
So, yeah, John, I know you're a teetotaling kind of fellow, but I'll assure you, I'd have misspent youth. And like the first time I had a really good hangover, I thought I was dying. I thought I was dying too. But anyway, seriously, like this is kind of a truly horrific image, right? And Adam and Eve are so grateful that they didn't, that the world became bright again, that they went and sacrificed what was described as a bull with a single horn, the Re'im. And so that's Re'im. And the thing that's wild about this is that the Talmud is very clear that this is the special animal with a single horn. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the way that that word Re'im is typically translated through the Torah, is always just described as a wild ox. So one of the things about Re'im, about it being a unicorn, is it's kind of hidden in plain sight, because the word Re'im is almost always translated as wild ox. So an example of this, a good example is Psalm 22, which has this classic phrase, deliver me from a lion's mouth and from the horns of wild oxen, rescue me. Except the word is Re'im. It's not the word for oxen. It's the word for a unicorn. And right. So if you'll notice, we'll talk later, but there's a lot of Jewish art from the medieval period on that has unicorns, and it's often a unicorn paired with a lion. And it's referring right back to Psalm 22 of this connection between a lion and the unicorn, and there's other midrash that connect them as well. So okay, that's the Re'im. Oh, I think the other classic midrash about the Re'im is a story about King David when he was young. In this version, the Re'im is really huge, like a behemoth, right? It's like epically large, and in this story, it's so big that David doesn't actually realize that he's started to walk up the back of the Re'im. He thinks he's just going up a hill until he's up on the shoulders. And then he kind of freaks out when the Re'im starts walking away, and he realizes, oh my God, I'm on the back of this huge unicorn. But it's all okay, because the Re'im sees a lion again, that lion connection, and kind of freaks out that that's the king of animals and it's going to be in trouble. And so it kind of bows its head down so David could then walk off the front of it. So that's the Raim. So Tahash is the second kind of unicorn, the second reference to unicorn. Now Tahash is famous, a famous phrase, and it's comes from the part of the Torah where the Ark and the Mishkan, the house of worship, that Moses is overseeing the construction of during the Great Exodus. Everybody has to come with gifts to help build the Ark and to help build the Mishkan. And there's a description that the Mishkan is covered with Tahash, and it's often it described as dolphin skin sometimes, but it's always like, no, like Hebrew is uncertain, right? It's this weird word. You'll see like the rabbis and commentators will have arguments of like, well, Tahash, maybe that just meant it was colorful and it's the same color as this other kind of dye that kind of sounds like Tahash, or maybe it refers to ermine, to like these like mink kind of ermine weasels from the north, and there's these connections that get made. There's these different arguments, but there's then another version of where the word Tahash comes from, and this also comes from Talmud, specifically from Shabbat 28. And what it says in Shabbat 28 is that Rabbi Ella said that Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish said that Rabbi Meir said, by the way, this is class. If you're not familiar with Talmud, this is always the way of it. Like, it's always like, you know, it's not that I said this, it's that my teacher said this. And so you can't argue with my teacher. You can argue with me, but you know, not my teacher. Right. So, and Rabbi Meir used to say that Tahash existed in the days of Moses, was a creature unto itself, and the sages did not determine whether it was a type of undomesticated animal or a type of domestic animal. And it had a single horn on its forehead. And this Tahash happened to come to Moses for the moment when the tabernacle was being built, and he made the covering for the tabernacle from it. And from then on, the Tahash was suppressed and it was no longer found. Right? So you've got this magic unicorn, clearly a really big one, that shows up just in time to get ritually slaughtered so that you could make, you know, tan its leather and make this big cover. Now, one of the things that's in common here between this and the other, the story of Adam with the sacrifice, is you don't make sacrifices of things that aren't kosher. And you don't, and there's this whole argument in the Talmud about how you can't make whatever Tahash is, it has to be kosher, because you would never make the Mishkan screens with being kosher, which again is one of the reasons why people argue that it couldn't possibly be dolphin skin, because dolphin's not kosher. I'm just saying, according to Rabbi Meir,
the rabbinic tradition is that my friend and yours, Abraham, followed the 613 mitzvot. This is why I argue that cheeseburgers are kosher. however, if you can't sacrifice anything that isn't kosher, well, there's another thing that we have to look to our friend Abraham for, and that to me says that cannibalism is now kosher.
No, wait. All right, you totally lost me on the logic on that one. How did you just come to the conclusion that cannibalism is kosher?
What famous story about a sacrifice involving Abraham could I possibly be referring to?
But nobody ate Isaac.
No, but if you're going to, if you can only slaughter something that is kosher. I'm just picturing
Akedah Burgers, right? Like, it's a new restaurant in town called Akedah Burgers. Like, all right, you got to help me here.
If what you're saying is you can only sacrifice something that is already kosher, and Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac, either Isaac was made of chicken's flesh, or
or
he was kosher.
He was kosher.
Well, I'm all I'm saying is we can call him Long Abraham Silver.
Oh God. All right.
hey, I just got
I feel like
text
I need
my
to
rabbi telling me not to come back.
Yeah, I was gonna say like oh man. All right, you
oh Charles is gonna be so proud understand. Of me for bringing cannibalism onto this show.
As we said, there's a reason why you couldn't read any of your writing to middle schoolers.
Like, it's true.
It's true. All I know is you're probably sitting there taking notes. Next story, kosher cannibalism. All right, so here we go. We've got Tekash and Re'im, and we're going to come back to Tekash in a minute. There's some other great stuff about Tekash later on. So okay. The third is Keresh. So Keresh comes again from Talmud, from Chulin 59. And this is one of those weird, entirely self-contained mythic stories that you just kind of go, wait, what just happened? And it never comes back anywhere else. But Keresh does show up in other places, but this story is just kind of all by itself. So here's the story of the Keresh.
Lay it on me.
All right. The Gemara recounts the Roman emperor said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, "Your God is compared to a lion, as it is written, the lion has roared and will not fear. But if so, what is his greatness? A cavalryman can kill a lion." So, you know, if cavalryman can kill a lion, then what's your God? Cavalryman's just as cool, right? So Rabbi Yeshua said to him, "God is not compared to that lion that the cavalryman can kill. Rather, God is compared to the lion of Bel, I can never say this right, Bel Ila'ai." So Bel Ila'ai is like this mythical forest that's being described here. The emperor said to him, "I ask you, show it to me." Rabbi Yeshua said, "You cannot see it." The emperor said to him, "Truly, I wish to see it." Rabbi Yeshua prayed for mercy, and the lion of Bel Ila'ai set off from his place of origin toward Rome. When it was 400 parsangs away, that's a lot, it roared once, and all the pregnant women miscarried, and the wall of Rome fell. So it's like a giant lion, like 400 parsangs is not a mile, but just imagine, you know, so far away that you couldn't even, it just that's how big it was, right? When it was 300 parsangs away, it roared another time, and the men's front and back teeth fell out from fear. No, not the middle teeth. The middle teeth were totally fine. Just the front and back teeth. All right.
Still eat carrots. It's fine.
Right. And even he, the emperor, fell from his throne to the ground. The emperor said to the Rabbi Yeshua, "I beg you, pray for mercy with regard to it that it should go back to the place where it came." Rabbi Yeshua prayed for mercy in regard to it and returned to the place. So, of course, because I screwed this up, because I didn't grab the whole thing. But anyway, so this giant lion, and there's another part of the story which I didn't grab here because I was a doofus, that kind of goes on to talk about how the lion, there's also this giant unicorn called the Keresh that is kind of partnered up with the lion here in the next part of the story that I forgot to go grab. So clearly everybody needs to go to Sepharia.org, look at Chulin 59b and see the rest of the story. But there's so this idea here that there's this giant unicorn called the Keresh. And again, it's kosher because there's this set of discussions that go on elsewhere in the Talmud that talk about how the Keresh has to be kosher, and it makes a bunch of comments. So at least at the period of Talmud, in the period where this Midrash was writing, Jewish unicorns were all over the place. And they're kind of like mini behemoths with horns. They're these big, bull, very strong, and, you know, evidently tasty and kosher. And we're like totally down to sacrifice them. So
okay. Every time you say the name, say it again.
Which one? Keresh? Re'im?
I am a Texan.
Yeah.
And so every time you say Koresh, what do you think I think of?
Are you thinking of David Koresh?
I
Like,
am
what are you?
thinking of David Koresh and the Branch Davidians from Waco.
Oh, jeez.
But I wonder now, I wonder if that's a root of his name.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. And like I've mentioned elsewhere in this show that my Hebrew is not very good. So like very well might pronounce things wrong, but I'm certainly not able. I can't like do the tracing that I would love to be able to do there.
The other thing I
So
want to mention real quick
yeah.
is that I get called a unicorn a lot. And that's because I am a native Austinite. I was born and raised in Austin. Austin is primarily a transplant city. So it's very rare to see. The phrase unicorn the term unicorn is also used in kind of not derogatory towards the people, but is also used a lot in the polyamory scene.
Oh, sure.
A unicorn is a person who is down to join essentially a couple and just be their play date. It's
We're not
again,
keeping our rated G
well,
for
I sure as heck am. The reason why
the
this is the derided, right, is because their unicorn hunters are seen as being predatory and not being emotionally and intellectually honest or kind to said unicorn. And then again, I get called a unicorn a lot. So the phrase calling someone a unicorn doesn't go with a Christian, it's not about
Sure.
purity. It's about
Rare,
uniqueness and
yeah,
individual,
rarity.
hard to find, which is another part of that alchemist story, right? So he couldn't find and hunt. But it sounds like unicorns all go over the place up ends the Talmud.
All over the place, and I want to tell two more stories before we kind of move on. Just to kind of bracket here. So we've told like a story of Adam and Naeem. We talked about David and Naeem. So another one, and I'm not going to read the Talmud as much as I would love to kind of read you the whole thing. Only so much Talmud we could do
Jack
without.
Staff Yomi starting here and now, folks.
I have this. So just as a quick digression, I have a lot. This library, like this, is not a video podcast, so you can't see my bookshelves behind me. But I've got a lot of books. You'd be shocked to know that I've got a lot of books, and every once in a while, when a new book shows up, my wonderful wife Stephanie, who when we got married, I told her we had one of those conversations of like, if you marry me, you also marry, right? And for her, if I married Stephanie, I had to promise that she and I would go to the ocean every year because she absolutely loves the ocean. That was We've always kept that up, at least until we got to Michigan, and she realized that the caveat was, we have to go to the ocean or to one of the Great Lakes, and that totally counted. For me, she had to marry my bookshelves. But every once in a while, I tell her, you know, if I ever got money, I'm going to have to get an entire Talmud and an entire Zohar. And she's like, how many books was that? I'm like, don't ask. She's like, no, you're not allowed to have that many books. No, someday I really will.
I have three of the Pictor Talmud volumes.
I know which one you're talking about. I just blanked on the
Two
ether.
of the Art Scroll Talmud volumes. I think those are both Talmud Yerushalem as opposed to Talmud Bavli. And for those of you not in the know, the Talmud Bavli or Babylonian Talmud is kind of the authority, because during the Babylonian, not exile, but enslavement, that's where all the mystics and really like brilliant leaders were. And so the Babylonian Talmud is considered the superior of the two, but there are in fact two. And then I have three of Daniel Matt's Zohar.
The Pritzker Zohar is what
Yes, Pritzker. Yes.
Right. I'm very jealous. I want the whole set of both, and someday it'll happen. But hey, anyway,
my copy, my volume one of the Zohar is signed by Dr. Matt.
Oh, all right. I'm very jealous.
He came and was a scholar, in-house scholar for the synagogue for a couple months. So
that's awesome.
Be jealous of my nerddom.
Dude, I'm always jealous of your nerddom. Okay, so Noah, so the flood was a big deal. Where were the unicorns in the flood? And so the story, there's a whole discussion in the Talmud about how the unicorn was saved by Noah and kind of carried through the flood. And this led to this discussion of, wait, well, how did that work? Because we just said that they were really big. And so there's one version, one rabbi is like, well, you know, clearly the unicorn was in the water and, you know, they just kind of put its head down on the ark. And another rabbi is like, but wait, we said it was big as a mountain. How is that going to work? Well, maybe they just tied it to the ark and fed it hay off the back. There's this wonderful discussion about how big was it really, and how did Noah save the unicorn if it was that big? And I always love this because there's this New Yorker cartoon. I think it was a New Yorker cartoon, you know, which had like all two of every animal going up on the ark, except for the unicorns that were kind of goofing around. And I'm like, no, they did. You know, like Noah really did save the unicorn. And this ties to another famous. So there are three things that Noah saved that, according to Jewish lore, that people don't tend to think about. One of them is unicorns. The other is shadim, demons. So this is like, so if you know Jewish commentary, Rashi is one of the great Jewish commentators. And he kind of went through to kind of clarify all this stuff in the Torah. And the shortest comment that Rashi ever made was to the list of animals that kind of went up onto the ark. And it was a two-word comment. He said, even Shadim, right? So the Shadim kind of went on board, and that's how the Shadim got saved. And the third one is my favorite and John's favorite, the giant Og, king of Bashan. And and the story goes that Og went to Noah and pleaded with him to save him, said that he was, you know, in the words of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, he was a humble bumble, right? That he was, you know, he was an okay giant, and that he promised to serve Noah and Noah's family if they just saved him.
So that worked out super well.
Well, you know, at some point we're going to do a 100% Og episode. And, you know, it was like, he was kind of a wild dude. The rabbis didn't know what to make of him. There's, but like, hold it. Like, well, but anyway, John, you love Og as well, right?
I do. Yeah. So one of the problems with writing religious themed novels and books is occasionally I have to remind myself like, oh, that's not actually Jewish legend. I made that shit up for my
totally.
Which is, but there's a lot of other times when I'm talking about books and stuff where people are like, oh yeah, you made that. I was like, nope, that's 100% real legend.
Yeah, no. And if you look at the stuff, it's like, if it's really, really, really weird, no, that's actually probably part of the talk, yeah. Right?
Exactly. I think that, I mean, that's the really funny thing, right? Is that, so, you know, we've talked about Shadim a lot, and we will continue to talk about Shadim a lot because, much like the rabbis, we love talking about things we don't know anything about.
And note, we, like the rabbis, we have a lot to say about things
exactly, we don't know anything exactly. About. The Shadim aren't necessarily evil or bad. So it makes really good sense that they would be on the ark. It's also worth pointing out that the purpose of the flood was, according to like the Book of Watchers, Book of Enoch, was because of the Nephilim, right? The half angel, half human giants, of which Og was.
Right.
And so it's curious that they spared slash saved Og when it's Og's fault.
Right. And this is the whole humble bumble thing, right? Is that he's basically saying, I'm not one of the bad ones, right? I'm okay. And you can trust me. And like
Yeah,
I
and
said,
I tell my wife that that's not a new book, and we've had it for a long time. It doesn't make it true.
we're gonna have to do an Og episode
Yeah.
soon
Okay.
because,
So
like I said, the
what I was going to
premise
say is
is
really
yeah.
funny about this is, in order to actually have one of every animal on Earth, on a boat, it's already got to be a city-sized boat, essentially.
I always just kind of assumed the Ark was kind of like the TARDIS, right? It's just bigger on the inside than on the outside.
That's a good assumption. So what I've always assumed is that it was two of every animal that was local, because, but of course it's trying to apply logic to thinking to mythological storytelling. It doesn't really work cleanly.
Yeah, it doesn't work out well for us. By the
But
way, you know, okay.
once you add giant ass animals like
Yeah, it just
the behemoth and
it's
Og
awesome.
and
Awesome.
giant unicorns, it's incredible.
Yeah,
It's just
if I had a
ridiculous.
TARDIS, I would be going straight back to Noah and I'd want to see how all of this worked out.
You think the
Okay.
doctor didn't?
No, I bet he did.
Doctor
I don't think
definitely
it
did.
that doctor definitely did. Okay, so we're kind of working our way through. We've done Adam, Noah, we've done a David. I'm gonna hit one last story, and then we're gonna kind of talk about some other stuff. But I just kind of want to bracket all of these stories. So I
Okay.
mentioned that I was gonna tell one more story about the Takash, right? So the Takash was the multicolored version of the unicorn. So, and by the way, this leads to one of my favorite bits of Jack headcanon, which I'll explain in a second. Okay. So
Duh.
the Mashiach, just for Messiah, so we're all talking the same thing. There's this rich tradition in Jewish lore about it's someday the Messiah is gonna come. We're gonna enter into a messianic age. There's a lot of discussion about what that means that we're not gonna get into right now. Physical rebirth, spiritual rebirth. All sorts of kinds of things that could happen, but it's going to be this person, this descendant of David that is gonna come. So I'm gonna read the Talmud section here. This is Sanhedrin 98, but this one's a little obscure, so I'm gonna like comment on it as we go through, even more than I usually do. But just think multicolored flying unicorns. All right. This is where we're going with this. And yeah,
Love
if this
it.
sounds like, Crystal Dash from oh shoot, what was Crystal Dash from? Ah, never mind. Frat, what's the
Are
like
you
little
talking
my
are you talking about My Little
like
Pony?
yeah, My Little Ponies. That's it. So think Crystal
Okay.
Dash here. This is
Is
where
it
we're
Crystal
going.
Dash?
Isn't it that? I don't know. It's
I
been a long time.
look. I have a 10-year-old daughter.
Check, she'll know.
She doesn't. She watched all of that so many times. I know more about alicorns than any 40-year-old man should. I know a disgusting amount about
Yeah.
alicorns.
I've
So
had more deep discussions about little girl TV shows with other adult males who are also dads than anybody you'd ever think. I have two wonderful daughters who are both in college now, but they were little girls at one point. They watched all that. But all right, so Sanhedrin 98. Remember, think multicolored flying unicorns here. And the Messiah, which is awesome, awesome picture. So Rabbi Alexandri says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi raises a contradiction between two descriptions of the coming of the Messiah. It is written, there came with the clouds of heaven unto one like unto the a son of man, and there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom. His dominion is everlasting dominion. This is a quote from Daniel. And it is written, behold, your king will come for you. He is just and victorious, lowly and riding upon a donkey and upon a colt, the foal of a donkey, which again is a quote from Zechariah. Rabbi Alexander explains, if the Jewish people merit redemption, the Messiah will come in a miraculous manner with the clouds of heaven. If they do not merit redemption, the Messiah will come lowly and riding upon a donkey. King Shapur of Persia said to Shmuel mockingly, you say that the Messiah will come on a donkey? I will send him riding the horse I have. Shmuel said to him, do you have a horse with 1,000 colors like the donkey of the Messiah? Certainly his donkey will be miraculous. And it goes on this discussion. This is Tachash, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have this like this awesome image of like the, you know, Messiah roaring out of heaven, like on this like multicolored like unicorn with wings flying down. Total My Little Pony style. It'll be glorious, right? And by the way, this I said headcanon. This leads to like Jack's favorite bit of headcanon, right? When we think we've talked about Tekash being this multicolored unicorn skin that's being used over the Mishkan, and you know here we've got like flying multicolored unicorns. What's the other great Torah story where like a multicolored skin or a multicolored garment plays into a role?
Mm-hmm.
Joseph, right? You know, the whole Technicolor Dreamcoat thing Joseph mm-hmm. gives. I am absolutely convinced that Joseph's multicolored skin was unicorn. And no one's going to convince me otherwise. It was absolutely a unicorn coat. That's what it was. It was absolutely awesome. Genuine 100% like Tekash, right? And no one's going to convince me otherwise.
No, that's good headcanon. That's good. Yeah. I like that a lot.
So we've been talking about this, you know, this version of the Kosh, though. We talked about there's this tension between the unicorn as a bull, the Re'im, like the kosher bull that was sacrificed. But like, I just kind of blew that out of the water, right? Because he's now talking about a unicorn flying out of heaven being a donkey, right? So we're now kind of moving into horse territory. Mm. And so you can see how like this then kind of moves into the medieval period where the idea that you're riding on a unicorn, you know, riding, you know, becomes a horse-like thing. It kind of moves off. I don't know. I don't want to overstate and say it's all tied back to this one bit of Talmud, but you can see that transition happening.
Always find it interesting when you get to these stories and these legends, right? Because you can see where certain groups who were familiar with those stories tried to bend them towards mm-hmm. other mythologies to make them fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were talking about that earlier, right? Where the early Christians kind of adopt all of this and kind of wrap it with some Christian ideas. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you end up with Jesus and a cross and the unicorn representing that and seeking after purity and seeking and Mary. It's a little kid. The whole putting his head into maid, you know, putting the horn on a head in a girl's lap always struck me as just being a little on the nose on that. Like, what exactly are you going to do with this pure girl once you find her? Like, I'm like, this is kind of weird.
I always felt the, you find a pure maiden and then you put something phallic in a lap. Like, hey.
But okay. Like we'll leave the Christians alone on this one. Like this is their legend.
All right.
I want to hear the Christian podcast. That's the Christian version of Wayward Children. I want to hear them explain this. Right.
I will not listen to that. Jack will listen to your show. I will not.
I totally would, by the way.
I pick all the battles. So just be aware that I am ready. Fisticuffs at noon.
Fisticuffs at noon, go fight. I would totally listen to this. Okay, but like kind of keeping with this theme of horses, I want like one last little bit, because this may come as a shock, but actually I think I mentioned it, so it's not gonna be shocking now, but there is a lot of synagogue art. I kind of like tip myself off here. There is a lot of synagogue art that has unicorns. And so this question of like, where did that happen? Like how, like what is the symbolism in a Jewish synagogue that would inspire them to have a unicorn? And it's not any of the stories that I just told. It's one other thing that we should talk about. And that is there's a moment, it's in the Torah. It's not in the, it's in Numbers. It's later in the Exodus, it's Numbers, where Moses gives this speech where he looks at the 12 tribes. And remember, the 12 tribes are all descendants of Joseph, of Jacob's children. And he gives each of them kind of, it's a prophecy, it's a description, it's this whole kind of, what are you about? And these things then turned into the standards, like the banners of each of the tribes. So like Benjamin is famously described first by Jacob and then later by Moses as being wolf-like. Which, by the way, leads to a whole other counter legend about Benjamin actually being a werewolf. But we'll get to that in a different podcast.
There's a book called Son of the Right Hand that
There is.
specifically refers to that legend. Looking up that legend on Jack's blog is how we met.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep. So. Where so the this is where the unicorn came from. So as you might know, there's the Jacob only had 10 kids, but we have 12 tribes because,
Only.
well, I mean, he was busy. He got busy. But so one of his sons, Joseph, there is no tribe of Joseph. What there are tribes for his two sons. One of his sons is Joseph's sons is Manasseh, and the other is Ephraim. And Moses describes them as Ephraim as a bull and Manasseh as a Reim, as a unicorn. And so you end up with these twin standards of the bull and the unicorn that show up in synagogue art to represent those two tribes. Now there's other things that get used to represent the tribes. The zodiac symbols will often get associated with the 12 tribes too, but each one of the tribes also has a standard. And I posted, anybody who follows me on Twitter, follow me at Adnesada, Adnesadeh on Twitter. I posted some synagogue art with unicorns, and one of them was really absolutely gorgeous. And I was shocked because normally when I see really cool pictures of synagogue art, it's usually like old country art, whether old country is somewhere Eastern Europe, whether it's Spain, whether it's in Algiers or Tunisia or somewhere in Yemen, that we're talking like older stuff. This was a stained glass window that was constructed in the 1940s in Texas, in Fort Worth at Temple Beth El. Temple Beth El has these gorgeous stained glass windows of all of the 12 tribes, and it has a Ephraim and Manasseh bull and unicorn, this radiant. And I was absolutely stunned because I don't, I like I said, I associate this kind of art more with 1700s, 1600s, maybe early 1800s kind of art. But here it is in the 1940s, getting picked up. And I immediately thought of you, John, because you, as you said, you are a diehard unicorn Texan. You're not anywhere near Fort Worth, though. Austin's not that close to Fort Worth, right? My Texas geography sucks. How far are you from Fort Worth?
I am about a 3.5 to 4 hour drive from Fort Worth.
So it would
And
be a little bit
I'm
of an
in middle
expedition.
Texas, by the way. And Fort Worth is not at a far end of Texas. Texas is just really fucking big, in the worst way.
Yeah, well,
Here's a fun story.
yeah.
One time I was opening up a I used to work in food sales, and I helped open a lot of the HEBs because I ran the cheese shops, right? I was the
HEB? What is an HEB?
HEB is the best grocery store in the world.
You know, New Yorkers, upstate New Yorkers would argue and say Wegmans is. I would love to see an
Upstate
HEB
New
versus
Yorkers
Wegmans.
who upstate New Yorkers who come to Texas go, oh yeah, no, HEB's much better. This is great.
Really?
Yeah,
Okay.
that's not me being a braggy. I don't
Well, a little
care
bit.
about Texas. HEB is just the best. Like every
All
time I
right.
go somewhere else, I'm like, man, what's wrong with these grocery stores? Oh, that's right. I'm spoiled.
You are spoiled because I think Wegmans is the best grocery store.
Come
But
when you
if,
come to Texas,
all
I'll
right.
take you to an HEB. You'll see. My little
All right.
brother lives in Washington, D.C. Lived in Philly for years. And every
Yeah.
time he comes home, he's like, oh, thank God, HEB.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Anyway,
So,
I say all this to say, oh, bingo for anyone who got that.
But Marty, in addition to being awesome in 100 ways and running their our Goodreads list, made this awesome bingo card, and that was absolutely one of the bingos right
I
there.
say all this to say, so I was opening up an HEB in northern Texas, just shy of Dallas, because HEB was terrified to move into Dallas because they didn't want to do battle with, anyway, that's grocery store politics, and literally no one cares about that. So it was a Friday. I was away from home. I was away from my daughter and my wife, and I thought, you know what? I am just south of Dallas, Fort Worth, where there are so many big, old, incredible synagogues. I'm gonna hop in my car and drive there for Friday night services. Jack,
Yeah.
Hashem tried to stop me.
Really?
The
What happened?
sky opened up, and it was one of the worst thunderstorms. Now, if you don't know much about Texas, you might think of it as bit like giant flat plains and nothing happening and dust and cowboys, all that bullshit. You might also think, hey, aren't there tornadoes in Texas? Not in Austin, Jack, but
But
in North Texas, between Bellmead and Fort Worth. Yeah, there sure are. And that day, there were three of them.
okay, Hashem was giving you a very clear signal that that was not the night to go to services for you.
I went to services. I pulled over in my car because I was halfway there. I pulled over my car as like debris is whipping past me. Like, look around. Like, see, I can visually see two tornadoes. Take my phone, call my wife. She doesn't answer. Hey, honey, just want to let you know, I love you and Aziza very much.
Oh, you didn't.
Okay,
You didn't just
now
leave her hanging like that.
I did. She
And she's
has
still
not
married to
forget.
you?
She has not forgiven me for that. That's for
Of course she did.
sure. And I sat there until I had any visibility, and I finished my drive to Fort Worth and attended services.
All right. That is awesome and amazing, but clearly you didn't see the big windows, or at least you didn't.
Did not. I
All right,
gotta
well, look,
admit, I wasn't seeing very much at that point. I was pretty freaked
I
out.
can imagine. So at any rate, if you ever make it back, or if not, find my Twitter feed and find the images. There's links to both that image and to a whole bunch of others. But there it is in Fort Worth, Texas. We have a Ephraim bull and a Manasseh unicorn. And so unicorns are still very much part of Jewish legends, lore, Jewish tradition. And again, not that whole innocence thing. It is always symbolizing kind of like wild strength. And that's the symbol of those two of Manasseh and Ephraim are this wild energy and wild strength. So I personally am a huge fan of Jewish unicorn symbology, though for a variety of reasons, the Christian one never never did much for me. It was always a little too prissy for me. It never kind of resonated. But anyway, John, congratulations. You have now attended my middle school class on Raim, Takash, and Keresh unicorns.
What a joy. What a joy to attend. Thank you.
Thank you. And look, and thanks again.
Hopefully your Marty. Kids were more respectful and less interrupting than I am.
They were, but only because I think I bored them to tears. You know, like honestly, teaching middle school kids is a little challenging. Like, I did my best, but I don't know how it all worked out. But yeah. Anyway, thanks again to Marty for the suggestions. This was a heck of a lot of fun putting all this together. So we should probably wrap all this up.
Yeah, let's talk about our recommendations.
Yeah, what do you got?
So I'm going to go a little weird this time. Hopefully you don't mind.
Not a bit.
So as a lot of you know, I'm an author. And we've plugged a few of my books on the show, specifically ones that have Jewish themes. What you may not know, I don't know if we've talked about this, I'm also a publisher. I own and run a imprint called A Gotta Try It. It is an imprint that focuses on Jewish-written, Jewish-themed speculative fiction and genre fiction. As far as I know, I'm the only press that focuses on those things. And as of, oh, well, this is, you won't hear this until after, but so right now, my submissions for new fiction for the 2025 publishing year are open. So if you have a Jewish story, or you have, you know, splatterpunk, anti-fascist, anti-racist, horror, bizarro, experimental, satire, dark creative nonfiction, all of those are things I am going to be actively looking for over the next few weeks. And if you've written something, go to madnessheart.press/submissions to let me know what you got. And maybe, who knows, maybe you'll be our next part of our next publishing calendar. I also want to say, keep on the lookout this next year of 2024, because we are going to be publishing a chapbook by Zach Rosenberg of Jewish ghost stories.
Oh, I can't
so
wait.
So lots of cool stuff kind of on the way. So keep your eyes open. I know this isn't a book recommendation like I normally do, keep your eyes open for new Zach Rosenberg project. If you haven't checked him out, also go check out his other books. And if you have your own story that you're looking for a publisher for, feel free to submit to Madnessheart. Madnessheart Press's open submission process.
Awesome. All right, so let me jump in. So there are a couple of books that I would have recommended, but I've recommended them in prior podcasts. And so those books are Natan Slifkin's Sacred Monsters and Harold Schwartz's Tree of Souls. Both of those were already on our Goodreads list. But if you're interested in digging in a little deeper into Raim, Takash, and Keresh, you know, those are really great places to start. So for tonight's recommendation, I want to recommend the wonderful book, A Jewish Bestiary, Fabulous Creatures from Hebraic Legend and Lore by Mark Podwell. Mark Podwell is a illustrator. So he has about, 40 different Jewish critters. Some of them are fantastic critters, like the Raim makes an appearance. But he also has the ant. And he'll tell like a very short, his own kind of short version of the story, which is then matched by one of his illustrations. And
well, that sounds great.
It's wonderful. It's gone through a couple of editions, so you can find a new copy, which is reasonably cheap, or an older one that's even cheaper. It's called A Jewish Bestiary by Mark Podwell. That's my recommendation.
Awesome. Tonight. That's a good one. Hey, do you have a recommendation for some music someone might want to listen to?
I do. So I want to say thank you as always and give a shout out to Yoshi Fruchter and his band Potom for the song Skin and Bones, which is our intro and outro music. Everything that Yoshi Fruchter does is awesome. Potom is awesome. And Yoshi has a new band called The Sandcatchers, which is just dropping a new album right now. So go find it on Spotify. Go find it on his website. I think it's on Spotify, but it's definitely on his website, Sandcatchers. Yoshi Fruchter, amazing musician. And I want to give a shout out. We've been giving shout outs to Marty all the way through, but this is the official shout out moment. So thanks to Marty for maintaining our Goodreads link and for giving us the good idea for this. And I
Marty is like our unofficial showrunner at this point. She is. I cannot thank her enough for, and like, I want to point out that this, it's not like, oh, we've asked her to do this or we've contracted it. Like, she does this out of the goodness and joy of her own heart, and we are incredibly, incredibly grateful for that.
We are, and by the way, Marty set a precedent here, right? We did this unicorn episode because she had raised her hand and said, here's a good idea. John and I have like a long list of topics that we want to do, but if you have a specific question you want us to address, if there's a legend or a creature or a bit of magic lore that you're interested in, drop us a line. Hit me up or John up on Twitter or on Blue
Sky. Take the work off our laps and do it yourself so that we can have an easy time. We have all these things that we can talk about, and we're very joyful to do so, but we also want to talk about what's interesting to you.
Yeah, so
definitely let us know.
All right, man, I think that's it.
Okay, so thank you everyone for joining us. We will be back in a couple of weeks, but some parting advice, stay out of the ruins.
Definitely stay out of the ruins.